Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
You are listening to the Newcastle Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, and I'm delighted to say I've been joined in the studio with Aaron Stokes and Love Sport's very own Laurie Callis. A pleasure to have you both with us for the next hour. We are going to be talking about everything where Newcastle United is concerned. We're going to be looking at the 1-1 draw with Watford on the weekend, the disappointing League Cup defeat to Leicester last week, going out on penalties, and I know how important that was for the Newcastle fans. It said, let's see what Steve Bruce does in the Cups. Let's see what team he puts out. We want to make progress. Yes, Leicester are a very good side, but Newcastle were at home. Disappointing to go out on penalties. There were some injuries, whether we believe them or not, but we're going to be talking all about that. And I think we might have to talk about something that happened in the news this week. Believed, you know, a little spat, a little conflict, you know, because there's not much drama on Tyneside. You know, Newcastle, they always avoid that. They always manage to stay clear of any drama. You know, they've got a really owner that they're happy with. It's all peaceful up there. So it would be that when we go to the international break, two ex-players have decided to fall in out. I suppose we'll have to talk about it. It is the Michael Owen and Alan Shearer spat. All over Twitter, Michael Owen is releasing a book called Reboot, which is being serialised in the Daily Mirror this week. We're going to be talking about snippets from that book. But before we get into all that, let's do a little review of the game. Newcastle versus Watford, 1-1 at home. Laurie, what did you make of the performance from your team on the weekend?
It was all right. I mean, well, I say it was all right. It wasn't really. But in the context of having beat Tottenham, I wasn't too disappointed with drawing. I think if we'd gone into that game against Watford, who'd lost all of their games so far, hadn't earned a Premier League point, and had ended up losing that game, I would have been really disappointing. Yes, there were chances where we probably could have won the game. Not sure we necessarily deserved to have won it. But overall, yeah, I probably wouldn't grumble at a point. We beat Tottenham, which no one was expecting. That was a fabulous performance. It wasn't a great performance at the weekend, but for me, I was happy that we didn't lose, to be honest.
Well, you know, before those two games, obviously you got those 3 points at Spurs. If someone would have said 4 points, you would have gone, yeah, I'll take a point at Spurs and get the 3 against Watford. Football doesn't work out like that, Aaron. But are you pleased? Maybe it was a 1-1 draw Watford, but those two games, you pleased with that?
I think 4 points in 4 games, you can't grumble at that when you look at considering 2 of the first 4 games were against top 6 sides. I think if you'd have said at this point 4 points, you would have been thinking, right, well, that's probably a win at Norwich and a draw at Watford, not the, you know, the defeat at Norwich. In terms of last week, I mean, yes, you can't really grumble at a point, even though Watford are out of form, but I think the performance just leaves me with more questions than answers. How a team can go to Spurs, yes, they're not in the best of form, but how they can go to that stadium, pull off such a good performance, and then, you know, a week later just seemed to just be a completely different team. You know, there was just, they just didn't look like anything like they did the previous week when they were in London.
But Aaron, isn't this the same Newcastle that were terrible against Norwich, brilliant against Newcastle, then back to not being so great on the weekend? So as much as you're shocked they didn't continue that from Spurs, we was expecting a continuation from the Norwich performance, and they performed out of their skin, desire, commitment, effort. So maybe what we can expect with Newcastle is to expect the unexpected.
Yeah, maybe we're going to have to expect a 1-0 win at Anfield, you know, in 2
weeks'
yeah, time.
Nice. That's not asking for much.
I mean, yeah, I mean, it's doable. No, but, I mean, yeah, maybe it's, I mean, Bruce didn't have a full pre-season. Maybe he's still getting a grip with the team. He probably still is. He's probably still trying to work out his best 11, you know, who he wants to play in central midfield, whether he wants to still play Joelinton, Almiron and Saint-Maximin together every week. So, yeah, maybe it is just going to take a couple of weeks before, you know, the team start putting in consistent performances, whether they're good or bad.
Generally, hearing from you lot, you know, you've said you, there's not much to expect with Newcastle, their performances. We don't quite know what we're going to get. But yet you've still almost, you can fall in, and all football fans do it, you fall into a trapdoor of 1 week performing well and then going, well, we beat Spurs, that was away. Now we're playing Watford, who have yet to get a point on the board, bottom of the table, we're at home, we should be beating them. But that's not looking at the broader picture, the bigger picture, that is Newcastle, who haven't played great themselves. So I think it was almost better to avoid a banana skin, because you always see that when you go and win, then you lose the next week. Still get a point at home, it's another point to add to the tally, it's a decent performance.
Yeah, and I think at the end of the season, as I said, you could look at that point and say, you know what, actually, it's not too bad to get a point, especially at this stage of the season where it's not like you're fighting for every point. And also, just from Watford's point of view, I was looking at their fixtures, and in their next seven games after the Newcastle game, they have Arsenal, Man City, Wolves, Tottenham and Chelsea all in the next seven games. So that's a pretty horrific set of fixtures for Watford. So when you put into context that actually that Newcastle game could have been a really important game for them, then actually a point doesn't look all that bad. The other thing I would say on that is, obviously Rafa, when he was here, was known for some sort of flagship performances. Obviously we beat City last year, but one thing that he did really well was beat the teams in and around us when we were kind of fighting and trying to turn our form around in the back half of both of the last two seasons.
Not all of them though, Laurie, because he was, and no disrespect to Rafa, but he was a bit of a draw specialist as well, wasn't he? So he wouldn't always be in around those teams, because a lot of the times Newcastle, when they should have won, drew a lot of them games.
Well, perhaps, yeah. I mean, I think he does have pretty good statistics from what I know of last season, against the sort of bottom six teams or teams that were maybe below us. But obviously, yeah, as you say, you can't lose those games. And at the end of the season, yes, it wasn't a brilliant performance. But in context, as I've said a few times already, I think although the performance was pretty uninspiring, I'm fine with a draw with that.
Well, not only are you fine with a draw, if we continue to look at the game, Watford did score very early in the first 2 minutes, I believe. Hughes got that opener. Almost straight away, the game plan goes out the window, if there was a game plan, because I know Steve Bruce has come under some scrutiny that the players aren't doing warm-ups, that they know what their drills are, where they should be disciplined in certain areas of the pitch. If there was a game plan, Aaron, that's gone right out of the window. Were you pleased, if we take the point out of context, were you pleased with the strength in character and a test to come back and keep pressing? Because when you go 1-0 down, heads can drop a little bit.
100%. And, I mean, St James's Park, when an away side scores a goal in the first 30 seconds, can become so toxic, especially with the atmosphere around there. You know, it could have been so easy for the crowd to just get on the players' back and for the heads to drop. And we're so used to, under Alan Pardew and under Steve McLaren, if Newcastle went behind at home early on, you may as well have just blown the full-time whistle. There was no way they were going to get back. Under Benitez, that was different. You know, we went 1-0 down very early to City last season at home and beat them 2-1. So, looked at, yeah, fair play to Bruce, because he got it all wrong against Arsenal, I thought, in the second half, especially when they scored. When Arsenal scored, it just looked like the plan went out the window. So, fair play to Bruce for organising them and making sure that game wasn't just finished after 30 seconds.
Because I believe Newcastle fans, they're not asking for much. They just want that fight. They want to fight for that shirt. It's all about pride. 90 minutes on the weekend. And if you're still going to fight and your team's going to offer that, it's not much to ask for. That's all the Newcastle fans want to see. A bit of effort. Let's get back into the game. You mentioned a toxic atmosphere. Before the season started, we all spoke of a potential boycott and the Mike Ashley scenario situation, shall I say, with him being the owner and not investing in a team. And there's so much to unpack from it all. The attendances, though, if we look at that, they're still, the fans aren't coming back in droves, low attendances. Newcastle announced it at 44,000. Me, taking a look at it without a computer or calculator, I looked far from 44,000. I know Aaron, yourself and Ketch, who we also always have on the show, Matt Ketchell, he said, you know, it's a combination of Newcastle adding the season ticket holders who aren't in the stadium, but because they've already purchased their seat, they add them on and then they maybe jiggle around with the numbers. Is that a little bit true? Because 44,000 seemed a way off for me, Aaron.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Newcastle are the only club in the league to do it.
Oh, no, of course.
You know, looking at it, I mean, I obviously wasn't in the northeast at the weekend, but looking at it, there wasn't 42 or 44, whatever they announced it that it was. It looked a lot less. Now, let's say there was 42,000 there. Let's say there was. I can't really, you know, say for sure that there wasn't. It again leaves me with so many questions as to why the first game of the season against Arsenal, when there was this massive call on social media for a boycott, why there was 48,000 there. And then the next week, after we've beaten Spurs, there's 42,000. Like, it doesn't make sense in that respect. I think what it does show is that, you know, maybe, you know, fans, even though we've had a relatively good start of the season, are saying, right, well, we're still not going to go back. We do mean what we say. Some of them might have looked at that Arsenal attendance and thought 48,000 is probably too much. We probably do need a boycott, because if we're getting 48,000 every week, Mike Ashley's not going to do anything. So it leaves me again with so many questions as to why the attendance dropped so much.
Does that not help? It doesn't sort of help the boycott though, does it, Laurie? Because if you're saying our fans are seeing that the attendance is too high, we need to step away to make a bigger statement. But also you don't want fans to do, oh, well, we'll start the boycott when it's Watford, because we don't mind missing the Watford game. When it's Arsenal, a big six side that Aaron mentioned, I'd like to see Aubameyang and Lacazette up close. I'll go to that game and I'll really start when we play Watford. But by that point, you have got that fantastic 3 points at Spurs. Now we are trying to build a little bit of momentum. The season has kicked off. This isn't the right time to do it, is it, Laurie?
Well, yeah, I think you're right. I mean, there's a combination of things, I think. I think you're right in the sense that Arsenal is a particular type of fixture where it's kind of exciting. But also, because it was the first game of the season, football was back. We've had months and months of uncertainty. And the one thing that fans could have been certain about was that there's football again at St James's Park on Saturday. So I think that that's almost already worn off, you know, like it already feels like we're weeks into the season because there's been so much drama in various to various extents. And I don't know, I completely agree with you in the sense that, yeah, it's not going to make that much of a difference now. But having said that, if it gets any emptier, it's going to start being very noticeable, because honestly, you looked at part of the stadium when you saw the highlights and it looked like Middlesbrough.
Just to put in, I think if it was 42,000, that's the lowest Premier League home attendance we've had since 2012. It's a massive drop.
So still a statement in itself.
It is a massive statement. If there was 42,000 there, that is a huge statement, because that it's never that empty. And I mean, that is obviously still bigger than most Premier League grounds. But I looked at those photos on Saturday and I was shocked at how little was there. There was only 22,000 there for the Leicester game in midweek. I know that's a cup game, but even that, we were getting those sort of attendances when we played Northampton and another team in League 1 or League 2 in the Cup, like the last 2 years. So fans are turning away. It's just baffles me sort of why it's happened now and not 4 weeks ago.
Well, football is the biggest distraction from off-the-field problems. It's easy for us to talk in the pre-season about Mike Ashley and everything surrounding the drama there and Steve Bruce being appointed as manager. Now we are 4 games into the season. Have fans changed at all, even in the slightest, towards Steve Bruce? Because there's been a couple of decent results. You would have said we would have taken 4 from 4. Has he managed to endear himself to the fans at all? Is there a small possibility of that?
I think he has. I mean, I obviously sat here in this seat about 6 weeks ago before the season started and said, you know, Newcastle fans were fickle. Like all football fans, if Bruce can have a good start, fans will just forget about the summer. And I don't know, it just seems like, not that he's sort of adhered himself to the fans, it just seems like it's all just gone quiet. There's no sort of abuse at him, but people are still wary. Give it another 4 or 5 weeks, I think, and then we'll really know. If Bruce can still sort of keep this up of getting, you know, 3 points, then a draw, then maybe defeat, and we're sort of just cruising, I think he will escape the type of abuse he got over the summer. If the results start to dip and we're getting towards Christmas and it's looking like, you know, we're in a bit of a precarious position, I think that's when maybe we'll start to see it again.
Just quickly on those attendances, we're speaking of the home attendances. What about the away games then, the Norwich and the Spurs? Has that changed at all, Laurie? Have fans started to stay away? Because normally, home fan and away fan support is very, very different.
Well, yeah, I know there's some people like Sean, who's on the show with us, who is like, boycott home and away. But, you know, we've sold out our capacity at all our away games so far. I think just on what you said about Steve Bruce, what was quite interesting to me is on Twitter, over the first few games, there was people saying, oh, well, why are people not booing Steve Bruce? And there was a discussion about whether or not he should be booed. And also, after we got that win at Tottenham, I thought it was really interesting to see there were quite a few fans who were saying, like, oh, this is Rafa Benitez should get credit for this performance because it was very Rafa-esque, the setup to defend. Now, then you've got to ask the question, should Steve Bruce then not get any credit for that because the players are playing how they used to play in last season and he's just allowed them to go back into Rafa's mould? Or should you say, oh, well, fair play, Steve Bruce has actually shown that he has a little bit of tactical nous? And I think that is slightly unfair on Steve Bruce, but at the same time, you can definitely make the point that he had more success when he played in the style that Rafa played in Newcastle.
Credit for Steve Bruce. There's a first. Never did I think we would be talking about that. Does Steve Bruce deserve credit? Please call us 0208 70 2558 or tweet us at Love Sport Radio. Next, we're going to be looking at that certain Twitter spat.
Love Sport.
That was former Toon striker Joe Allen talking to the Posh Boys and Martin Allen on Love Sport Drive yesterday. Joe Allen there, slightly sitting on the fence, got a few splinters. He didn't really want to say when pushed about it. I mean, that is a brilliant clip, isn't it? Personality of a flip-flop. Mercenary. You know, personality nil poi. It's unbelievable. Joe Allen there. Do you make him right, Laurie?
Yeah. I mean, I think everything that Joe said, you know, he's got a beautiful way of putting it, obviously, but I'm sure I won't be as near articulate as Joe was. But the thing is just like, where do you start with Michael Owen? One of the things that he said was that he was holding out for a bigger club to come in for him. The thing is that a bigger club didn't come in for him. Liverpool weren't prepared to pay him what he thought he was worth. And he left them in the first place to go to Real Madrid to try and chase some dream that Beckham had established. And he did all right. He had an okay goals record at Real Madrid, but the injuries were already established. And he came to Newcastle, and it's fine saying, yeah, you know what, I regret the move. It still got him into the World Cup squad the next year, didn't it? And I don't know, at the end of the day, you sign that contract and you've got to give your all for a club, and it's absolutely fine to speak in retrospect. But at the time, Newcastle was the option that he had, and you can look at it either way, but they gave him an option to play first-team football, which he didn't necessarily take, but it got him into the England squad.
Well, let's read the snippet of text that we have got available to us. Michael Owen, in his book Reboot, here's what he had to say. Freddie Shepherd came out with the line that he would happily carry me, Michael Owen, back to Anfield himself. He was being a huge fan of the club. Freddie was only doing what all the fans constantly do at almost every football club. They believe that their club is 10% bigger and that their team is 10% better than it actually is. This is a kind of blind illusion that is true of Newcastle United, which, as I reach for my nearest tin hat, it is only a big club in the sense that it has a lot of fans and a big stadium, but not really a big club. They're historically not successful off the pitch. In fact, they are the opposite. They've never won much in recent times. That's the little snippet we have on offer to us. Aaron, what do you make of what Michael Owen had to say there?
Michael Owen, for me, is entitled to say whatever he wants about Newcastle United. He had a great career before he came to us, but I just find it, you know, a bit bizarre that, you know, he's saying this after refusing to play. Newcastle United might not be a big club, but that is down in part to him. If he had played those last two games in 2009 instead of feigning an injury, we might not have got relegated. We might have stayed in the Premier League. So it just seems a bit... If, for example, Nobby Solano said that, or Laurent Robert, or I don't know, Kieran Dyer, or someone who actually, you know, played for the shirt and who was actually like there when Newcastle were, you know, sort of at their peak, then fair enough, fans would probably be like, yeah, you know what, you're right. But for Michael Owen to say it, someone who just did not, you know, he didn't give two hoots about Newcastle before he signed, when he signed, after he left, I just find it bizarre that he's choosing to kick us when, you know, he is part of the problem, really.
Well, this is it. And why now? Everyone is entitled to their opinion. Everyone is allowed an opinion. But is there a bad blood between him and Newcastle that we didn't really know about? We know what the fans think of him necessarily. But why? I know one could argue that Michael Owen's just being honest. He's releasing a book. And if you're releasing a book, you have to say what you think. And, you know, that helps sell the books. It is always about the money side as well, the business side, the numbers. But why did he need to go on record and have those digs at Newcastle? Because Newcastle did pay him a lot of money. A lot of the time he couldn't contribute. He was injured. It felt like a sly dig. And then when Alan Shearer came back and said, you know, a simple Twitter reply of, well, you say all this, but you was happy to take the 120 grand. Michael Owen has then said his words have been manipulated and it was just a great chance for Shearer to have a dig back at him. But this is Michael Owen's book. We can only take what's written in his book. He must have gave the okay or cleared it and said, yes, permission for this to go at. So where do we stand on this with Shearer coming back and getting involved in the spat, Laurie?
Well, I think one thing that I find interesting is Newcastle United and Alan Shearer are not the only people in the book that Michael Owen takes a dig at. He takes a dig at David Beckham, saying that when he got sent off in 98 that he still holds that against him and all sorts. There's plenty of other people that he's had a dig at in the book. And the thing that the media have taken hold of and the thing that Twitter's taken hold of is the Newcastle thing. And it's quite ironic. And
it's
I
a shame
Aaron
if they're
saying,
not a big club, though. Yeah, why exactly. Well, that's Mr. David Beckham, Mr., you know, one in five people know him, but they're talking about the non-big club Newcastle United.
And I know Aaron was on the station again before and said it's a masterstroke by his PR team. Also, bear in mind, you read his words out there. I guarantee he did not have a single bit of artistic input into that because he's never spoken a word in such an articulate way as the book's written.
I'm lucky enough to work for the newspaper group that is serialising the book. You know, so I have seen large swathes of this text got sent to me. This large text about Newcastle got sent to me at like 5 o'clock on Monday evening. And Michael Owen can say it's out of context and misread, but it is not. What is written on the back of the mirror in the serialisation is what Michael Owen has
said. So, Aaron, just give us some insight there. You've seen it. You've seen more chapters, I suppose. You've seen more snippets of text from this book. Is it really what we're seeing is in the book? Is Michael Owen words? You as a Newcastle fan, you were shocked to see this.
I got sent the email with the text over, which is going on the back page on Monday night, and had to sort of keep it under wraps for 5 hours.
I bet
just
that was
sitting
difficult.
There going, this is going to kick off. I mean, I didn't obviously realise it was going to kick off as much, but what Michael Owen has wrote hasn't been taken out of context. We haven't taken little snippets of blah, blah, blah.
Or not been manipulated,
no,
as he's
saying. It has not been manipulated. Michael Owen has said these things about the club, about them not being a big club. And like you say, unprovoked, he didn't need to have a sly dig. And as I mentioned on the show earlier, or on the station earlier, it is a masterstroke from his PR team because... Now,
you say masterstroke, though, because now he is coming in for some negative views from the fans over social media. We're talking about it's not the greatest light that Michael Owen has been painted in. So you say a masterstroke. It is for the book, but for him himself, it's not great exposure, is it?
What I meant was for the book. I mean, if somebody said to you in the street, I've got a copy of Michael Owen's book, do you want it? You'd probably be like, no. I mean, he's not renowned for being the most articulate and funny pundit. But now you're saying, you know what, I might actually read that because of the spat with Shearer and the spat with Lineker or whatever. And I think from a PR point of view, what happened yesterday was all positive for Owen's book. I mean, it's painting him in a bad light.
But it's come at a price, though, hasn't it, Laurie? Surely for Michael Owen, all right? It's come at a price.
I'm not sure. Not in terms of Newcastle fans. I don't think he had very good
reputation
already.
He'd already burnt his bridges with Newcastle fans. So, like Laurie says, I don't think his stock was already very low, so...
And it doesn't sound like he's that bothered either, whether he has good stock or not with Newcastle fans. We all know that he's been well documented, that he's fell out with Shearer for the last few years. I think the thing that's really disappointing and probably made it more disappointing at the time is we know how long for he was our record signing. And, you know, at the time he was the best player that we had on paper. Like, you know, he should have been great. And I remember when we signed him, there was like this pullout in the Chronicle and it was like a poster. And I had it up on my wall for not for that long in the end, probably, but it was like Michael Owen became a Geordie on the 31st of August 2005. I remember it so well. And you know what? Like, he didn't ever take on that responsibility or didn't even seem to comprehend what he could have been to the football club. And like, when you look at who Alan Shearer is and what he means to Newcastle United, and even irrespective of all the other Premier League goals he scored and being an England striker, what he means to Newcastle United and Michael Owen, when he signed, he had a chance to be an absolute legend. And I don't know why he's chosen.
Clearly,
now
though,
to...
being a legend, he said he didn't even want to play. It obviously doesn't mean that much to him. Asking you two then, as Newcastle fans, were you aware of the spat between Michael Owen and Alan Shearer? Because obviously we never know how tense things can be. But Gary Lineker tweeted and then he said, oh, actually, I feel awkward now. I like you both as friends. I don't want to get in the way. So he was sort of alluding to the fact that he didn't know there was a bit of bad blood between them. We hear from Martin Allen on Love Sport Drive earlier. He said he knows people that were with them both at the time. They're playing cards the night before games, all very friendly. How has it had a demise like this? How has it rapidly declined where they're now taking shots at each other over social media, Aaron?
I think it's been sort of common knowledge, especially among Newcastle fans anyway, for the past 5-6 years that they didn't get on. We obviously didn't know the extent of it, and yesterday's probably ramped that up. But I think during their playing days, as I said earlier on the station, I think during their playing days they were fine, especially when Owen first arrived at Newcastle and played alongside Shearer before he retired. if what Paul Ferris has said in his autobiography is true, and Owen really did say, I'm not playing the last two games, when Alan Shearer was manager, I mean, how can we blame Shearer for then saying, you know what? Like, the moral of the story, Michael Owen's on £120,000 a week. Yes, I understand he didn't want to get injured, but to then not play for a club that are a game away from getting relegated, Shearer is, you know, within his right to say, well...
And it clearly speaks of someone who just is all about the money, wants to earn money, because I'm fine with someone saying, oh, I fell out of love with it, I don't really want to play anymore. But if you don't want to play anymore, you was happy to take the £120,000 a week. And if you wasn't really in love with the game, you then went on to move to Man United, he could have easily retired. You know, Michael Owen, I'm sure he wasn't short of money at that time. We honestly could speak about this for much longer than we've allowed for. But next, I'm delighted to say we're going to be speaking to Alex Hurst, the chair of the Newcastle United Supporters Trust.
Love Sports.
You're listening to the Newcastle Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, and I'm joined in the studio with Aaron Stokes and Love Sport's very own Laurie Callis. Of course, we've talked about everything Newcastle. We looked at that 1-1 draw with Watford at St James's Park on Saturday just gone. We were just talking about the Michael Owen Twitter spat with Alan Shearer after his book Reboot has been serialised in the Daily Mirror this week. We're going to be talking a little bit of that disappointing League Cup exit against Leicester last week. But before all that, I'm delighted to say joining us on the line now, Alex Hurst, chair of the Newcastle United Supporters Trust. Alex, thank you for joining us and giving us a little bit of your time. We really appreciate that. Firstly, a lot going on in the news with Michael Owen and Alan Shearer at the minute. What do you make of it all? Is Michael Owen, is he really sort of... He's not helping the bad blood between him and the fans, is he?
No, he's not. But it's kind of a sideshow, really, I think. Michael Owen's standing hasn't got much lower amongst Newcastle United fans, but I think he's okay with that, or he wouldn't have written what he's written in his book. I think in this case, for someone like Michael Owen, any publicity is good publicity. So it's really not something that I think a lot of fans are too concerned with. It's never nice to hear things, you know, like from a player who earns so much money out of a football club. I think someone calculated the figure about £350,000 a game he played, saying he didn't want to be there and kind of confirming what everyone already knew. But ultimately, it's ancient history now, and he's got a book to sell. He needs the publicity, and he's once again using Newcastle United to make a few quid, but he's not the first and he'll not be the last.
Well, wasn't it enough that he did earn £350,000 in appearance? Wasn't it enough for him to earn that money now to go and to help sell his book, make digs at Newcastle? Was that just going a step too far? You know, like you said, to use Newcastle again? Is this where fans sort of feel aggrieved?
I think a lot of fans feel aggrieved. You know, it is very much like I think you used the word social media spot there. That would be spot on. I think everyday life tends to continue away from social media. But ultimately, like you say, yeah, he could have been happy with what he'd done. He had a very successful career for large parts, very unsuccessful at the end of it, and he's a very wealthy man because of that. It just seems a bit needless, but you know, when you're a guy struggling to make an impact in the media like Michael Owen has over the last few years, you need a bit of publicity. And you know what, if this is the way he wants to live his life, this is the way he wants to live his life. There's not a lot we can do about it as supporters.
Alex, I just want to move on and not really give this PR stunt too much more airtime. But obviously, our last two results we've had kind of chalk and cheese almost. A real unexpected victory against Tottenham and then quite disappointing at the weekend against Watford. I just wanted to get your opinion. Before the end of October, we've got to play Liverpool, Man United, Chelsea, Leicester, you could say, is another pretty decent side. What sort of approach has only really Brighton... the Brighton game in that block of games where you'd say we absolutely should be winning those games. What sort of approach do you want to see Steve Bruce take? Do you want him to see him play an attacking side, or how do you hold out hope for us in those next couple of fixtures?
Fixtures are going to be very tough, obviously. I think you're absolutely right to include Leicester in that club of very difficult games, even though we've got two fantastic results at Leicester the past two seasons. It's going to be really hard. Saturday was a real missed opportunity because of the fixtures like you've talked about coming up, and B, because Watford were so poor. The fact that we failed to trouble Ben Foster, the goalkeeper, is a real concern, and I think that's everyone's concern this season. It's goals, isn't it? Lack of goals in this side. You know, Watford scored three goals so far in four games this season. You know, in games against, you know, a kind of porous Arsenal with a lot of players missing. Norwich, who can't stop conceding goals. and Watford, who can't stop conceding goals, so it doesn't bode very well. I think he's gone back to basics. I think he has to go back to three centre backs, which he started with, but also the kind of two holding midfielders, and try and score goals and nick points on the break. I think if Newcastle aren't in the bottom three at the end of this run of games, I think you'll see it as a success. And it's hard to disagree with that, because, you know, like you say, once we get through those fixtures, there's a run of more winnable games against more meaningful opponents. And, you know, how many players are you going to have fit? Who's going to get suspended? All those kind of questions will come up when you start getting beat heavily by teams at the top of the league. So, yeah, like you say, really tough run of games. And you just want to see the team do what they were good at before Steve Bruce come in. So he can't claim to have made us any worse. So that's defend well and get out of a few tough games with a few helpful points.
Alex, you obviously in your role have, you know, quite a good interaction with the fans, and you obviously more than most know the sort of atmosphere and the mood up in the northeast. Charlie obviously asked us before what, you know, the sort of atmosphere was like towards Bruce, and we can obviously give our opinion from down here, but how do you feel, you know, what is the sort of feeling towards Bruce now after the first four games in terms of what it was in the summer?
It's apathetic. I really think that supporters have been quite kind to Bruce. You know, you saw a lot of criticism of fans, you know, at a national level. In fact, Jamie Carragher wrote a piece for The Telegraph about it, saying the reaction to Steve Bruce had been ridiculous. And once you get out of social media and get into the ground, there's actually been very little, if any, anti-Steve Bruce sentiment from match-going supporters. You know, two sold-out away ends at Norwich and Tottenham. Team was vocally backed at those games. Home crowds have dropped, which is no surprise, about 5,000 down from last season, or roughly when he has his tenure. So I think that the attitude towards Bruce from fans is, from these four games, is a shrug of the shoulders. This is kind of what we expected. Chaotic, not seeming to be as tactically astute. The players are still trying. The players are still putting it in. And I don't think Steve Bruce will ever lose that. But it's kind of the worst kind of thing that could happen for Steve Bruce, is it's gone exactly as people planned and feared, and that's badly, without going, you know, terribly. We haven't imploded. Great result at Spurs, but ultimately I think fans know what the crack is. They basically know that the club won't make the same mistakes again as they did 3 years ago under Steve McClaren. If we're in the relegation zone or cut off by January, he'll be out of a job, and everyone's just kind of to wait and see if that happens.
You touched there about the home attendances. We touched on it before. Obviously, the club, the club's official figure was, you know, about 48 for Arsenal, and then it was around 42 for Watford. Why do you think there was such a drop, you know, considering that week one of the season at Arsenal was meant to be like the big, you know, the big impetus was on this boycott?
You're asking the wrong person for the boycott, because I didn't, you know, plan it or organise it or anything like that. Ultimately, a lot of these things are very social media orientated, and a lot of match-going supporters aren't on social media. I think rather than any organised action, what will really punish the club is apathy, like I've said. And in terms of falling attendances, I mean, tickets for the Watford game weren't cheap. You know, ticket in the Gallagher then was about 36 quid, and they're not prime tickets by any stretch of the imagination. And, you know, obviously you've got this kind of drop of 4,000 or 5,000 season ticket holders, I think. Maybe less, but definitely a drop in season ticket holders. You've got to remember, in the summer, we've got three bits of information from the club. Number one, the manager's leaving. Number two, the season tickets are going up if you're not on a long-term deal. Number three, here's when you kit, it's the most expensive in the league. So there's a whole kind of myriad of reasons there. And the fact that prices, I think, in the last 3 years, if you went on a long-term deal at Newcastle United, your season ticket's gone up by as much as 33%. That's a huge increase for any Premier League club, particularly in an economically challenged area like the North East. So I think the fact that, you know, fans aren't willing to put their hands in the pocket, or certainly a percentage, say like a 10% drop in support at St James's Park, you've got all those reasons, plus the fact that the team, despite a great result at Spurs, haven't been scoring goals for a long time, even under Rafa Benitez, was struggling to score goals. Not a lot of reasons to kind of go to the match if you're kind of part of that kind of 10-20% of the crowd who are struggling for whatever reason to become motivated and support the club. And like you say, you have your people who won't go back while Mike Ashley's there. So I think it's only going to head one way, unless we pick up some seriously good results at home.
Alex, you've mentioned a few times now the need for scoring goals, and obviously we've discussed on the show about Joe Linton maybe needing a little bit of time. He took his goal well against Tottenham, but you know, you can't expect him obviously to necessarily hit the ground running straight away. Be great if he could end the season on sort of similar tally to Rondon last season. Obviously we've got Muto as well, who scored in the League Cup, but you know, he's had more games but not a lot of starting game time, so it's quite hard to kind of gauge where we are with him. But something that I found really interesting is how the national media as well as the local media seem to have jumped on Almiron and his lack of goal scoring threat. And from my opinion, last season Almiron was fantastic when he came in, and he didn't really need to be scoring at that point because he was doing something that we hadn't had before that during the season, which was bridging the defence with the attack and actually giving us a little bit more of an outlet rather than necessarily scoring himself. Obviously coming into this season, his first full season in the Premier League, is that something that you perceive as more of a problem now or something that he needs to resolve? And from what you've seen of his game, do you think that that's something that he really could offer in the Premier League?
I think Almiron's role on the side is more important this season, having lost, you know, kind of 20 guaranteed Premier League goals in Rondon and Perez. The onus, therefore, falls on the likes of Joe Linton, but particularly Almiron, to bridge that. I mean, if Joe Linton and Almiron, and you can argue on Carroll, but how fit is he going to be? If those two players don't get 10 goals each, you're then asking players like Isaac Hayden, Sean Longstaff, to chip in with goals, maybe Christian Atsu, and they're just not going to do that because that's not their game. And although Christian Atsu was our best player on Saturday, that's also a worry because he's a very limited player, and you credit to him for playing well. But when Christian Atsu is outshining Almiron as he did, it's a concern, and it should be a concern for Almiron. Listen, he's not playing badly and he still contributes in a positive sense to the team. My issue with Almiron this season is that he's far less tactically disciplined than he was under Rafa Benitez. He's dropping very, very deep. He's picking up the ball in his own half, and he's not sticking out wide. And whether that's because he's been given more freedom, whether that's because he's not listening to the manager, I don't know. The one thing you can say about Almiron is he is getting chances. He should have scored against Watford on Saturday just after they scored, and it was a bad miss. And you know what? Footballers are used to criticism. I'm sure it's no big deal to him. We need... You know, I appreciate where fans are coming from when they're saying they don't like the criticism, particularly, like you say, from a national broadcaster of Almiron. But we need him to score. That's a fact. He has to score goals this season, or we're gonna really struggle. The same has to be said of Joe Linton, like you say, who's looked good, took a good goal against Spurs, but he's just so deep. He's coming deep for the ball. He's having to contest for headers. I mean, I don't know about you, but for me, it's like watching Newcastle and the Padre with Papi Cisse, where he was coming so deep to contest every long ball. By the time he does win it, flick on our head, or we do create a chance, he's not actually in the box, and that's a sign of a team that's really struggling to control games. And I think that's one of the concerns about the Watford game, is at no point in that game, apart from maybe a 15-20 minute spell at the start of the second half, were we in control of that football match. And when you're not in control of games, players who are not used to the Premier League, like Almiron, like Joe Linton, who are pretty young as well, and Almiron's a bit older than Joe Linton, they're going to struggle. So I think as a Newcastle United fan, all you can do is get behind the lads at games and hope that they and the manager can see it through. But it's definitely a concern, to answer your question.
Well, hopefully, you know, a big price of both those players. Hopefully he will start scoring goals. We're now at the international break, so hopefully Almiron will fix it in that time. Alex, thank you so much for joining us and giving us a little bit of your time tonight. We really appreciate it on the Newcastle Fan Show. Hopefully we speak to you soon. Alex Hurst there, chair of the Newcastle United Supporters Trust. Always great to speak to Alex. Next, we're going to be looking at that League Cup disappointing defeat to Leicester City at home.
Love Sport.
You're listening to the Newcastle Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, and I'm joined in the studio with Aaron Stokes and Love Sport's very own Laurie Callis. We were just talking to Alex Hurst there, the chair of the Newcastle United Supporters Trust. Great to hear from him. We, of course, were speaking that social media spat between Michael Owen and Alan Shearer and reviewing the Newcastle draw with Watford on the weekend at St James's Park. It was 1-1 there. Unfortunately, maybe a little bit more negative news where Newcastle are concerned. Let's look at the League Cup now, because you did exit at the first opportunity. You were playing Leicester City at home at St James's Park. No disgrace. It went to penalties, but Newcastle did get knocked out. But why I want to talk about this, Aaron, you mentioned the first real test for Steve Bruce, and Matt Ketchell actually said it's the first real test for Steve Bruce. Can he win extra fans over, or any fans over? We want to take the League Cup seriously. Now, that doesn't always, even if he did take it seriously, it doesn't always mean you're guaranteed to progress. You did go out. There were some changes. A lot were injury-based. You know, Steve Bruce got him in early, chronic fatigue. A lot of players were suffering, whether it is very early on in the season. Were you, A, happy with the team he put out or the ones that were available to him? And B, were you impressed or not impressed with their performance?
I think I was one of the few people that actually was impressed with the team. You know, Bruce said that, you know, one of the first things he said when he came in is that he was going to give it a real go, something which other managers haven't because they just haven't had the resources. And I think, I know he had to make some changes because of injuries, but that first 11 that he put out, I thought was quite strong for a league game.
Strong enough, though, because Leicester was a very strong team they put out. Brendan Rodgers made no bones about it. It was his strongest team, regardless if they got a Premiership match on the weekend. They wanted to win and go through.
Well, that was what I was just about to say. Obviously, it was strong compared to Leicester's, who made, I think it was two changes from the Saturday to the Wednesday. So, yeah, I mean, look, but that, for me, hits the nail on the head of why Newcastle fans have been so fed up for 10 years, because Leicester City have the resources now to, one, challenge for the top six and put out League Cup teams and FA Cup teams that are capable of going deep in the competition. Newcastle can't do that. That, to us, well, to a section of fans, was a strong team, and it still was always going to be beaten by Leicester, really. I mean, I think they did well to get to penalties, but
you say beaten, but in penalties it can always go the other way. We could easily be sitting here now, Newcastle, not as strong as Leicester in the team sense, the first 11, but we've gone through on penalties. Unluckily, it was Leicester the other way. Laurie, it could have been so different, as always in football.
It could have. Honestly, I as soon as it went to penalties, I knew we'd lose. I didn't even bother like following it after that.
Why? Why that negativity from the off?
Honestly, it's just there are some things in life that you know, and you know that Newcastle were going to lose that penalty shootout.
Maybe the England national team in penalty shootout, not Newcastle.
Newcastle's record is on par, if not worse. I cannot remember the last time we won a penalty shootout. Seriously.
I just knew, and I did rewatch Fabian Schär's penalty because everyone said you've got to watch Schär's penalty because it's so cool, he just rolls it in. And didn't really cheer me up that much. The thing is, I wasn't really expecting to go through. You're so used to now. I don't even think of a cup run as being a thing, really, as a Newcastle fan, because it's been so long. Like, under Mike Ashley, when was in the FA Cup, when was the last time we got past third, fourth round? Like, it's just not a fixture in the season when I think about being a football fan and going through the motions. You don't expect to have a cup run. I agree with Aaron. I didn't think it was a dreadful team that you put out. I didn't think at this stage it was necessarily worth changing the goalkeeper. But, you know, there are some good players there. I think Matty Longstaff is by far and away good enough to be in a team for Newcastle to be worthy of his place. So, yeah, I wasn't disappointed with the team. And obviously, when we went a goal down and then we equalised, I was pleased with that. But at the end of the day, it got to penalties and I just had the same feeling.
Well, one of the arguments in the Newcastle game is that if Steve Bruce does play a strong team, if he risks those first team 11, players could get injured. Matt Ritchie obviously went down with a terrible challenge. Now he is out for a long time. That is the Newcastle United's front office. That is Steve Bruce's argument, isn't it? If I play these and we're playing three games a week, this is going to be the trouble. We don't have that squad depth. We could get an injury. Unfortunately, we did. Matt Ritchie, how was that?
I think the for me, that Bruce was in a sort of no-win situation because, one, he had to play a strong team, because he had to say to the fans, look, I'm going to give this a go. Other managers haven't. I'm going to be different. So in that respect, he had to play a strong team. But as I've touched on, Newcastle don't have the depth and the resources to do it. And for me, Bruce suffered. In his first three games as manager, Bruce was suffering two or three injuries a game. You know, Kraft nearly came off at half-time. Richie's obviously been injured. Saint-Maximin was rushed back. Joe Linton came off against Norwich. The injuries are already starting to build up, and four games into the season, that isn't what you want. So for Bruce, like I say, I think his back was against the wall. He had to work out, was it worth risking the players getting injured, or was it worth risking upsetting the fans, you know, and, you know, crashing out horribly to Leicester, getting beat 4-5-0 because you've played the kids?
Well, it is the international break. Has it come at almost the right time now for Newcastle, where injuries are concerned and also where performances are concerned? Has it maybe come at a bad time? You're doing okay, or is it the right time, Laurie?
I think it's hard to say. As we've said, we've got a couple of difficult fixtures coming up, so maybe it's useful to, you know, if we can get a couple of strains from a few players and minor injuries back, then that's going to be beneficial. I think the important thing, again, in terms of the international break was not losing that game to Watford, because I think it would have been a really different psychological approach that you would have had to go through then going into a difficult set of fixtures, having that surprise win against Spurs, but then that would have been completely written off as kind of a coincidence or a fluke or whatever. I think with the injuries and the League Cup debate about injuries, it was quite hard to be critical, because it was hard to tell how much people were injured, you know, what were injuries, what were precautionary, you know. So within the context, yes, in answer to your question, I think probably a good time for the international break.
Aaron, do you, very quickly, do you agree that the international break has come at the right or the wrong time for Newcastle?
I think it's came at the right time. It gives, one, the injured players the chance to recover. Two, it gives Bruce an extra couple of weeks before Liverpool. And three, the Watford game wasn't a good performance, so we've got nothing to lose.
Well, there you have it. Nothing to lose. The international break is now upon us. But don't worry, because we will be speaking to the Newcastle Fan Show next week.
This is Love Sport. Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.